In a fascinating television docudrama about the premiership of David Longhi, the Beehive receives an alert from the American Air Defense Early Warning System that a Russian nuclear attack is imminent. In the brief time before the warning turns out to be a false alarm, confusion and high anxiety pervades the Prime Ministerial office. Afterwards, David Longhi and Margaret Pope, his personal assistant and speechwriter, discuss how you might spend the time if you knew you only had 20 minutes to live. In response to a somewhat lame suggestion, Margaret Pope makes a pointed and provocative proposal in which she suggests a much more enjoyable and high-energy way to while away one's last minutes on Earth. The conversation is seen as a marker point in the eventual disintegration of the Longhi marriage and the repartnering of this political duo. While the New Testament would not agree with this formula for making the best use of your last few fleeting minutes of life, it is nevertheless very interested in the issue of the quality of end-time living. In fact, it offers some quite specific directions and recommendations about how to await the end. This is the substance of this morning's readings. The end, you might be thinking. Can we take this first century apocalyptic proposal seriously? Our difficulty in doing that is in part related to something I referred to last Sunday. We are so fortunate and should be so thankful for living in a country that has known stability, security, and prosperity for so long. Our good fortune in this regard inclines us to think that the future will amount to more of the same, only better, due to scientific and technological advances. We forget all too easily that for most of our lifetimes, the sword of Damocles has hovered over our heads in the form of possible nuclear annihilation. For the first time in the history of humankind, the possibility of ending all life on Earth through the use of weapons of mass destruction has been and is a distinct possibility. But there's a more fundamental issue at stake here. The passage of time and the advance of human history isn't just a story of more of the same, or of recurring cycles of repetitive patterns, or of one damn thing after another. It's a story that's going somewhere. Like a good novel, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Indeed, the end will unlock the meaning of it all. This purpose-driven, future-orientated view of human history lies behind Western notions of progress and of human advance. Secular-minded scientists and humanist backers of progressive causes often seem unaware that the Bible is one of the main sources of this remarkable take on time and history. When Yahweh comes storming out of the Sinai desert, as a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, leading that group of runaway slaves from Egypt into the promised land, he sets in motion this dynamic view of history. The book Exodus describes and declares a set of key events that frames up a story of meaning and purpose and of the human story on the move. That's why Father James Harding's Caversham lecture next Tuesday evening is important. The crossing of the Red Sea by those runaway slaves and the meeting of Moses with God on Mount Sinai are key historical events in setting all this in motion. The God whom we serve is a doing, acting God who declares who he is by what he does. To ask who God is to receive the answer, the one who rescued his people from Egypt and who raised Jesus from the dead. Once Jesus has been raised from the dead, the nature of time changes decisively. It is time moving towards its end, and when there will be no more time, and that's the point when Jesus returns in a second coming. This is an essential aspect of our faith, and I'm looking forward to it. The Thessalonian Christians have grasped this part of the newfound faith with both hands. They're very resurrection and second coming oriented believers. But the response of some of them to this urgent possibility has caused a problem that Paul feels obliged to address. They are living in a state of excited idleness. Since Jesus is coming back soon, there's no need to do anything, including earning a living or doing the bare modicum of survival activities sufficient to get food on the table. Somebody else will do that for us while we speculate and dream about what to expect and make a nuisance of ourselves generally to the rest of the church who've remained on the ball. In case you think that this was a problem confined to the first century AD, I remember Pentecostal friends who referred to members of their church who had become unemployed and who described their state of life as, quote, going full-time for the Lord. Paul may have been a brainy theologian, but he also had a highly developed work ethic. He had a practical, highly portable skill as a tent maker that he could use at the drop of a hat to earn a living and so not be a financial burden on the congregations he had started and to whom he was ministering. Therefore, he's a tough love directive for the Thessalonian slackers. Work or you don't eat. Just because you think the Lord is near, this is no excuse for becoming a drone and a burden on others. Luke has some more end-time living advice. Exercise discernment and don't be taken in by false teachers and false messiahs who predict an imminent end to the world off the back of recent catastrophic events. That, of course, has been a recurring problem in the Christian world ever since. From Jehovah's Witnesses to the nuttier fringe of revivalist religion, there's been no shortage of self-appointed doom predictors who claim quite falsely to be accurate readers of God's timetable for the future. The Church of Luke's day has an even more pressing issue to do with what appeared to be apocalyptic events. As the Roman Empire descended into civil war after the suicide of Nero, and hot-headed Jewish religious nationalists stirred up an all-out revolt against Roman rule that would end in catastrophe and the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, the early Christians are being counseled in today's gospel reading to stay out of it and not to get sucked into pointless bloodletting. This is wise advice for Christians in every age about the wisdom of not taking sides in sectarian disputes. I said before that I believe in the second coming of Jesus and that I'm looking forward to it as the resolution of the injustices of the world in keeping with the ardent aspiration of today's Malachi reading that we didn't hear. But the end comes in different ways and in different forms, and it's important to keep a sense of proportion and of prudence about such an expectation. Reflecting on why it is that a number of my friends who were ardent Pentecostals in my youth and who are now not involved in the life of the church, one of the reasons is an over-promising that took place in their churches. They were told to expect the mass conversion of New Zealand, a brief time of tribulation, and then the return of Jesus within their lifetime. When none of these things happened, a considerable credibility gap opened up about the teaching they had received. This helped to chip away at their sense of ardent faith. There is a final point I want to make about how to await the end. I once entitled a sermon, No Time is Slack Time. The Bible distinguishes between chronos, ho-hum time, chugging along time, and drift along time, the kind of ordinary time in which not much is happening, and kairos, crucial time, decisive time, significant time, crisis time. In today's readings, kairos time is what is being talked about. We think of crisis as a bad thing, but the New Testament is rather more enthusiastic about it. In crisis time, things come into clear relief. The underlying pattern of why things are the way they are emerges into the light of day, and people are urgently invited to do something about it. It's a time to make crucial decisions, to live in a state of heightened situational awareness, and to be ready to act as the situation requires. With the season of Advent almost upon us, and with the readings from now on having a very Advent flavour, we're being invited to let Christ's message, his wise, strong directives for living, permeate every aspect of our living, our thinking, and our desiring. The New Testament offers us a new vision of history's ultimate goal. It is of Christ himself who will be there to meet us as he has the last word on the human story. We need to be ready for that.